We're back. It's a distraction. I'm Drew. That's Roth. How you doing, Roth?
I'm good, man. How are you?
I'm good.
Okay.
I was away on holiday. Now I'm good.
Oh, yeah. How was your pip across the pond?
Oh, rocks. It's always like when you take your family somewhere, because I know this, I've talked about my dad working for airlines in the fun bag, and I can talk about it a bit more freely now, but my dad, back in the 1990s, in the 1980s, he was an airline executive, he was in marketing, and he would, because he was, because he was part of the leadership team, he got to fly for free, right? That meant also that we got to fly for free. It was always standby, so my mom would always have to get us to the airport 4 hours in advance and then sit there and bend a gate agent's ear to get us onto a plane, but we would get on, and so I went to a lot of places when I was younger. I went to London. I went to Paris. I went to Asia. I went back to Australia, where I've been born. And you, when you're a kid, you take that stuff with you, you know, like you that stays with you. And I always find that really valuable and educational for the kids. And also, like, I get to eat really fucking good tikka masala. So it was cool. It was a good time.
Yeah, that's a cool one. The version of this that I have as somebody who traveled much less widely is that I was talking to my father last night about the time that we went to the first round of the NCAA tournament in Providence during the 1990s.
Oh!
And his biggest memory of that was that there were some really drunk guys at the game who were, like, betting on everything. And one of them revealed that his strategy was to put money on the team with the hottest cheerleaders. And his friends were like, oh, yeah. And that, which is nice to hear that from, like, and I mean, because that's something that I remembered because I was like 16 or whatever and was basically aghast and wondering if that's what it was like to be a grown up. And if it was, if there was some way that I could opt out of it.
That's actually more what it's like to be 16.
Yeah. My dad's 81, and obviously it made enough of an impression on him. So shout out to these guys for being disgusting enough to scandalize two generations of Roth men.
Hey, speaking of 81, it's Ray Ratto, our
That's
guest.
Enough.
How you doing, Ray?
Hello. I just want to say, Roth, what you've got there was a preview of the entire DraftKings empire.
I know. I feel like that's basically, like, I remember them waving money around, like the guys around the chain link ring in Kickboxer. And I know that they weren't really doing that. Like, I'm sure that they were not on the two men enter, one man leave mindset quite that hard. But it was the sort of thing where it's a lot easier to understand how the one growth sector in the American economy right now is idiotic prop bets when you've seen the kind of guys that make idiotic prop bets.
Well, I mean, that's free money for the other side.
Yes.
You'd be a fool. You'd be a fool not to exploit those people.
But the guys collecting at that point were just Providence mobsters, like guys who went to high school with Buddy Cianci. Like, it was different than FanDuel.
Ray, there's nothing I love more when people mention Providence for me to immediately say, it's a mob town! Totally mobbed up. I know.
Yeah, I was
going to
say Providence and mobsters is a redundancy,
right? Residence is the term they use up there for that.
Anyway, while I was gone on vacation, I missed opening day of the baseball season. So with Ray here, we're going to do a completely half-assed game of good bad for the coming season. Are you gentlemen ready? I know the answer to that, but I'm going to make you do it anyway.
Yeah, sure.
All right, you ready, Ratto?
No, not
okay,
at all.
Okay, perfect, excellent. That's just what I wanted to hear. All right. I'm going to go so fast, it's going to blow your skull. We're going to start in the AL East with the Baltimore Orioles, who are under new ownership. And Peter Angelos just also died, too. So, like, things really looking up for the Orioles. Are they good or bad this year, Ratto?
It's a little rude, Drew.
Wow.
My apologies to all the Peter Angelos
fanboys
out there.
The dead and rotting carcass of Peter Angelos has made the Orioles a prohibitive favorite in the American League.
Now that Too Mr. soon. Angelos is out of the picture. Yeah.
I like the Orioles a lot because they are young and vibrant, and they are slowly but surely overcoming their cheaper instincts in a lot of ways to realize, hey, we can go for it. The Red Sox stink. The Yankees are in a weird place. And the Tampa run is about over, and Toronto has no idea what they're doing. I think the Orioles have finally been kicked out of their torpor, and realized there's a World Series to be reached, and they are as well positioned as anybody.
Yeah, I think they're awfully good. I also feel like Ray is assuming facts not yet in evidence regarding them stopping being cheap. They still haven't made more than 1 year commitment to anybody. Like, I want to believe that they can do it because they're absolutely good. I mean, we'll get to the Dodgers. I'm not sure that anybody is good enough to win the World Series, but the Dodgers are, or the Orioles are certainly good enough to get there. I just, I'm going to want to see them make a move that like potentially backfires, but makes them better in the moment. They've been very afraid to make that sort of deal. And I think that's the sort of deal that teams have to make if they want to go all the way. They're good as hell, though.
Will they make it with the new dude? Will the new dude spend money?
Oh, the new dude will spend money immediately.
Okay.
And once he gets his nose bloodied, then he'll stop doing it.
Yeah. But if he decides to, whatever, keep Corbin Burns for 5 more years or whatever, sure. Like, I would love to see that. And I think that would help me believe in them.
Yeah. Well, I think 5 years down the road is a lot to expect of your average billionaire.
Yep.
Let's move on to the Boston Red Sox. Good or bad, Roth?
They're not that good. Well, they're not that bad either, but they continue to not quite go in a way that I think they should. And
this is too half-assed. I want you to say good or bad, guys.
Oh, yeah, they're not that good. Bad.
Bad. All right. There you go. Rado, is that true?
Yeah.
Or bad?
Bad. They're all in on Liverpool, which means that they're not all in.
Yeah, that poo. Sorry.
You Walt, mate.
Yeah.
Are you having a laugh, mate?
The Yankees, Rado, good or bad?
Good. They still have enough guys in their lineup who can mash the ball that they'll score 900 runs and give up 850. Okay. They'll probably back in as a wild card.
Well, because they're a fun team, right? Because they have Aaron Judge, now they have Juan Soto. So, like, they're gonna hit a lot of balls out of this park, right?
You would think so, but they will also give up a lot of homers, especially now that Gerrit Cole is on a lawn chair.
The Tampa Bay Rays, Roth, good or bad?
They're in that Rays mode where they're kind of beyond good and evil to me. I do kind of agree with Ray that it feels like they're running out of magic a little bit. They had a lot pegged on a franchise player who turned out to be a sex creep and will probably never play in the majors again. In Wander Franco.
Oh,
and
that's too bad.
Yeah, it's tough, you know, but see wokeism claiming another young career simply because I actually shouldn't joke about it. Franco seems like a fucking monster and he should go to jail.
Right.
If any of these allegations against him are true.
Right. But, the allegations are of child sexual assault. So that's
that's beyond.
But the team itself is like, you know, they're the Rays. They're perfectly optimized, to put all of their players in the maximum position to succeed while also making it unlikely for them to win an arbitration hearing. It's a very complicated thing to do. I just think that that's really hard to sustain. They've done a great job sustaining it, but there's a lot of holes there now. Pitching is a question, and like they can't just keep stamping new dudes out in the way that they have.
Well, not with that attitude.
You can't count them out, but they don't feel quite right to me. Is that fair, Ray?
They've kept this going for 15 years. So you have to say at some point, they've figured it out. The problem is other teams are now figuring out what they figured out a while ago. And it's okay to steal an idea if you have the money to carry it off. And Tampa's, this is their highest payroll ever. It's like $85 million.
Yep. Wow.
And when it doesn't happen this year, they're going to suddenly revert to $50 million payrolls and become crappy again. So this is, it's now or never, and I suspect they're closer to never than now.
Rado, the Toronto Blue Jays are going to finish the East. Good or bad? Make it quick.
Bad.
Okay.
They're bad.
All right. What about the White Sox in the Central?
Yeah, what about the White Sox, Ray? Are they good?
The White Sox are worse than fundamentally bad.
Ooh.
They have an outside chance to have the worst record in baseball.
Ooh,
and
that's exciting.
I cannot wait for the day when they decide that Luis Robert needs to be traded, because I think that may come sooner rather than the trade deadline. I think they might back up the truck and try to become worse than the A's, as hard as that is to imagine.
Well, he's also so good. Like, it would be so nice to get him out of that environment. To put the White Sox thing in perspective and also to give you some context – on what it's like to work at defector.com. My three mentioned in our baseball Slack channel the other day that she doesn't think that the White Sox are going to lose 100 games. And everybody was like, what the fuck are you talking about? How could you say something like that? That is the standard for that.
Well, then was she like, I think they're going to lose 110.
No, she was like convinced that the fact that they have infielders playing in the infield and outfielders playing in the outfield, which they like haven't a lot in recent years. Like in recent years, most of the lineup has been made out of first base DH types being made to stand in unconventional places. I think they'll be a little bit better just because they have guys that fit the positions they're in, but they're awfully bad. I mean, like, they have the right guys, but they're not good.
So they're shitty. What about the Cleveland Guardians, Roth? Good or bad?
So they're kind of, this is an annoying answer. They're sort of the Guardians.
That's all you have for me right
now. Guardians thing. Like, they're trying to be as good as a bad team can be, or as bad as a good team can be.
A good, bad team? Good.
Right. Yeah, they're kind of sneaky annoying because they are trying not to commit, but also to be in wild card contention. They've been extremely cheap. They've been cutting costs dramatically the last few years. It's not out of the question that they completely bail if things go poorly this year. But they are also like a pretty good organization with some really good players on the team. My guess is that they're going to hang around in the 80s of wins and be a wild card also ran.
Oh, okay. So that's a good team, though.
Kinda.
That's not.
Am I being too nice to them?
Well, how do you define good?
Yeah.
A winning record.
Okay.
I think you're good if you have a winning record. Detroit Tigers, Ratto, good or bad?
In honor of my three, good.
Wow.
Their best pitcher is about to become known to other people, and that's Tarek Skubal, which is a great name.
It is.
On the virtue of that alone, they will be fine. They won't be a great team. They may not make the playoffs, but it's the American League Central in which no team should ever make the playoffs.
Right. But they're kind of improving, at least. Like, it's different than, like, the DNs are trying to do some kind of special dead man's float that they've invented using proprietary algorithms, and the White Sox are terrible. Doesn't take that much to be the second best team in this division.
No, but they also have Spencer Torkelson.
Kansas City Royals, Roth, good or bad? I assume bad, right?
Yeah, pretty bad, but they also tried some shit this offseason. I give them some credit. Like, they basically, I think, based on more or less what I just said, they, like the Tigers, have a lot of super high draft picks that haven't really done much good for them yet. Bobby Witt Jr. accepted. But you don't have to do that much to be in the mix all year in the American League Central. And so they signed some players. Maybe they'll trade them away. Maybe they won't. But they have this is the best roster that they've had in like 10 years. I don't know that sounds like a cool thing if you haven't followed the Royals over the last 10 years. I mean, I guess, or since they won the World Series.
They won a World Series.
In 2015. So that was 9 years ago. But they've done some stuff. I don't think they're quite good yet, but they're definitely better than they were last year.
Ray, what about my beloved
56 games a year ago? How can
I know? So I said better. We're all allowed to. I don't have to explain myself.
I mean,
what a good idea for a podcast.
Yeah, it's just people saying things, talking past each other. Ray,
what about my beloved Minnesota Twins, whose best player Royce Lewis is already hurt with a severe quad strain, which is not sound good. He's on the 10-day DL, and I hope it's not like a Mets thing where the 10-day DL becomes the 9,000-day DL. Are they any good?
When you lose your best player on day one, that's a sign from God that you could take the year off. I think they're bad.
What about when your other best player also gets hurt all the time? Is that good? Is that the sort of thing that you want?
Okay.
Byron Buxton is healthy.
Yeah, that's
right,
the other alternative for the Twins.
Yeah. I don't think they're bad, Drew. I think they're still the best team in this division.
And
they played great in the playoffs last year. They're just, of all the teams in this division seem as if their main ambition is winning the shittiest division in baseball and no more than that. And I don't respect that very much, but one of them is going to make the playoffs if they succeed at it. So
it sounds like some real AFC South energy.
It is
going
very
on
much.
It's also the NBA Southeast division.
Let's move west. We're a lot of booming and busting here. Ray Ratto, we have the Astros. I assume good, right?
Good, but a new manager, I think, is going to cost them 5 games because that's how it always works. Guy's never been a manager at this level before, and he's managing a team of people who have won championships in the past, are starting to show some signs of age, and no more than their manager does.
Yep.
That creates a lot of tension. They'll be good, but they're not. I don't think they're a factor in the bigger picture.
If the players know what they're doing already, though, does that cause friction? Wouldn't that sort of obviate a manager's inexperience?
If the manager insists on having his own way, yes.
Okay. Would this manager do that?
If he's willing to defer in a lot of ways to players who are used to knowing what to do and how to do it and have the skins to show it, they'll be okay. But first-time managers tend to not know how much to try to impose their will, and I think that'll be a problem.
Can we take a brief detour here? I know we're doing the whip around. The night before we recorded this, a guy named Ronel Blanco threw a no-hitter for the Astros. It was his 8th major league appearance. He's a 30-year-old rookie.
Wow.
I love an undistinguished dude randomly throwing a masterful no-hitter. And this was a legit one. This was like a complete game, 2-walk. Like, he pitched great. I have a sort of an internal ranking of the most undistinguished guys ever to throw a no-hitter during my lifetime, and I feel like this sort of has to be up there. Ray knows more than me and has been alive slightly longer. Can I just ask, not to spring this on you,
Rob,
who is the most rando dude to throw a no-hitter in your lifetime? My answer was always Philip Humber, but I feel like Ronel Blanco has to be up there now.
We know what happened to Philip Humber after the no-hitter, so it's still him. Well,
I don't. Can you tell me?
It didn't really happen for him. He was a very high draft pick by the Mets, but he went to Rice, which was famous for putting out great pitching prospects who arrived with just shredded elbows, and he basically had that kind of career. I don't think he really had more than another few good starts in the majors.
Yeah, he pitched a no-hitter, and then suddenly became a dismissible name in Baseball Reference history.
What about the LA Angels, Ratto? We got a little bit of addition by subtraction here without Shohei Ohtani.
No, you have subtraction by subtraction.
Oh, okay.
Let's not overthink this.
A more traditional method is when you get rid of your best player and your only drawing card, and your response to that is, well, we still have the 34-year-old Mike Trout. You got a problem. Plus, they still have Anthony Rendon, who is the most repellent player in baseball now.
Hey, I liked him.
He was a hell of a player once upon a time, but once he stopped being one of the most promising best players in baseball and became a guy who hates work, he became easy to root against.
Yeah, and I'll recommend it.
Angels, and now the Angels are exactly that.
But what if I'm against work?
Who would love to be somewhere else?
Drew, I can recommend Ray's blog on this because he wrote what I think is the best possible post that you could write about Rendon. During spring training, he was giving a lot of statements that were like about as close to "I would prefer not to" as a ball player can get. And Ray managed to find the... Because I think anybody that's ever worked for a living hates working for a living. It sucks. But at the same time, you can't say it, especially if you're getting paid $30 million a year or whatever. Rendon's probably getting in the 20s, merely in the 20s of millions of dollars per year.
Yeah, and so, a mere commoner.
It's hard. Like, you have to kind of hand it to him, but then you have to immediately take it back from him because he's being uncouth. And that is a very Angels sort of thing. It's sort of a weird hospice care facility for very well compensated ball players with ambivalence issues.
What if Shohei was point shaving though? Because he could bat and pitch, and he's a gambler. We all know he's a gambler, even though he says he's not. Well, so he could have if someone who can be two way like that, he can exert some real control over the outcome of a game by throwing it. And so maybe the Angels will blossom without a saboteur in their midst.
What are you arguing for a Ewing theory scenario?
Well, I didn't say that. Yeah. You know what? We should probably get off this topic of conversation.
You're underestimating the power of the angels to stink in all of that.
Yeah, I mean, look, I'm trying to play devil's advocate here, and I'm doing a poor job. I know they're shitty. The Oakland Athletics, Ray, I don't even know where they're playing this year. I assume they're quite bad, but where will they be bad? Are they playing in like a high school or something like that?
No, they're still playing. They're still playing at the Oakland Coliseum.
Oh,
before an average of 46,000 empty seats per day.
I went last year to a game. It was so much fun. I could do anything. I could have like.
Oh no! It's a great festival for anybody who just wants to be left alone or wants to take, you know, somebody else's wife or husband out to a ballpark and not be found.
Yeah, I like the adultery angle. The Oakland
they want to be awful. They are awful. As of today, they're already starting to do roster manipulation that almost looks like they're punishing players for not being behind the John Fisher tank like a maniac plan. I think it is possible for them to lose more games than they did a year ago. And a year ago, they lost 112.
What would like 120? You think they can do that?
So it's really hard to lose 120 games. I don't want to answer for Ray. I feel like if last year's A's team couldn't be the worst team in baseball history, then it might be that just no team can be worse.
I mean, the A's were...
Don't forget, I think the Tigers one year only won 43.
Yeah, they won 119. Yeah, that was like a formative team for our buddy Lauren Tyson, which is really remarkable to sort of just talk to somebody about like Nate Cornejo, who's that much younger than you. But yeah, that Tigers team had to go on a winning streak at the end of the year to avoid 120, as I recall.
Yeah, I think 120 can be reached by a team that aggressively wants to fail. And if they're already playing roster manipulation games after game six, that's a message that winning will not be tolerated.
Yeah, the thing too is that when you hear like about teams manipulating service time so that they can steal an extra year, you know, of arbitration, whatever, ordinarily it's always bad, right? Like that's just shitty management and unethical behavior. Usually it is a team doing it with someone that they think is a cornerstone and that they believe that either they or someone else is going to have to pay. The guy that the A's sent down, who we very politely not named at this point, is named Esturi Ruiz. I always call him Estuary Ruiz because I like the way that sounds more.
Way to go, jerk.
And he is like a marginal big leaguer. He has one really good skill, which is that he's extremely fast. He's not a very good hitter. The metrics say he's not a very good fielder either. He started this year, he went 3-for-8, and then they sent him down. That is weird. Like, this is not a guy that is ever going to break the bank on your budget, regardless of where you're playing, regardless of how much better this dude gets. It's like purely cynical. It's like major league grade fucking yourself up. Like, you don't really see this very much anymore.
Yeah, there's also a narrative, and I'll be very quick about this, that he was wearing garb from the protesters on opening night.
Yeah, he had one of the bracelets
and
on.
So there is an overwhelming sense that this is part roster manipulation and part punishing free speech by somebody who clearly, even though he's a marginal major leaguer, would do anything to not be on this major league team.
Right, because you feel like in terms of, and I'm not saying this in terms of morals, I'm talking about in terms of talent. Like it's a scab team in terms of talent, basically. Like
not only a scab team, a team of scab, not like actual scabs, like blemishes on your skin.
Sort of abrasion squad.
The Mariners, Ray, good or bad?
The Mariners are good, but not good enough. I mean, Julio Rodriguez hides a lot of sins, and I think Ty France is better than he's credited with being. But they replaced their closer, Paul Sewald, with a guy named Andres Munoz, who I think is ordinary at best. And their rotation is, I think, good at the top end with Luis Castillo and Logan Gilbert. But after that, it's profound journeyman. Plus, they have to play half their games farther away than any other team in baseball. So I think travel will kick them in the ass in the end.
Last one before we take a break. The defending champion Texas Rangers, Roth, still good? Can they repeat?
Yeah, for sure they can repeat to me. I mean, they won't. It's really, really hard to do that. And we haven't gotten to the Dodgers yet, and the Dodgers are incredibly good. But yeah, Rangers are fun. And I don't know exactly where the ceiling is there, but they have Evan Carter sort of broke out at the end of last year. Wyatt Langford, who made the team out of spring training and was one of the best prospects in baseball going into this year. There's a chance that they're better than they were. They're also not going to be as lucky as they were, because that also doesn't happen 2 years in a row. But I'm making a point of trying to watch them. They got a lot of cool players.
They're also that rarity that won a World Series with a very spotty bullpen, which is one thing that Bruce Bochy has never had. Even when he had mediocre teams, his bullpen was pretty well set. If he gets that straightened out, yeah, they're going to be in the World Series. If he doesn't get that straightened out, I'm with Roth. Yeah. It's that the luck that always evens out the second year will bite them in the ass. But if Bochy can fix that bullpen, a lot of sins will be forgiven.
All right, well, let's take a break, and we'll get to the National League when we get back. Before we catch a break, I just want to know that this show is sponsored by Carmex. Remember Carmex? Wow, it's still around. So if you've got chapped lips, but you're too stupid to buy a chapstick, remember the name, Carmex. We'll be right back. Hey, it's Drew, and this podcast is sponsored by Raycon. Hey, I was just on vacation, and you know what's helpful to bring along when you're traveling? Raycon Everyday Earbuds. Raycon offers amazing quality audio at half the price of other premium audio brands. And their optimized gel tips are designed to fit comfortably in your ears to actually stay there, whether you're on the go, or whether you're working out, or whether you're just chilling at home. I tend to use them, you know, in my chair where they're not going to fall out. And they come with me anywhere I listen, anytime. With 8 hours of playtime and a 32-hour battery life, I don't have to worry about whether or not they're up for the task. These earbuds also include 3 customizable sound profiles, tap functions, noise isolation, and awareness modes. So these are earbuds that you want higher-priced earbuds to do, only you don't have to pay as much. So go to buyraycon.com/distraction today to get 20% off your Raycon order, plus free shipping. That's right. You'll get 20% off and free shipping if you go to buyraycon.com/distraction. That's buyraycon.com/distraction.
Hey, it's Dave. Our friends at Blue Land suggested that I begin this ad read by saying that cleaning the toilet is not my favorite task. But it's one of my favorite tasks. It's not like my favorite task. But if we're talking about cleaning things, I find it very satisfying. And I've found it more satisfying since I started using Blue Land's toilet tablets. These tablets are proven to work on a range of toilet stains, including rust, mineral deposits, limescale, and hard water, all the things that you associate with a toilet that needs to be cleaned. Blue Land is on a mission to eliminate single-use plastic by reinventing cleaning essentials to be better for you and for the planet, and that deliver the same powerful clean that you're used to. The idea is simple. They offer refillable cleaning products with a beautiful, cohesive design that looks great on your counter. You fill your reusable bottles with water, you drop in the tablets, you wait for them to dissolve. You'll never have to grab bulky cleaning supplies on your next grocery run. And from cleaning sprays to hand soap, toilet bowl cleaner, and laundry tablets, all Blue Land products are made with ingredients that you can feel good about. The way that the toilet cleaner works is that it does come in one of those adorable little Blue Land tins, but you just drop it into your toilet. It fizzes like an Alka-Seltzer. You give it a little pass after that with a toilet brush, and your toilet is clean as hell. It's a real nice looking toilet. This is more or less the way that Blue Land stuff works. It seems like it should be too simple, but it isn't. It always works, and we use it for basically everything in our house. We use it for dish soap, we use it for the dishwasher, we use it for our hands, and now we use it for our toilets. It's a really good product. So, this brings us to the good news part of the ad read. Blue Land has a special offer for listeners. Right now, you can get 15% off your first order by going to blueland.com/distraction. You will not want to miss this. It's blueland.com/distraction for 15% off. That's blueland.com/distraction to get your 15% off.
And we're back. We're previewing the Major League Baseball season with Ray Ratto, but we do have to talk really quickly about college basketball, specifically the women's Final Four, because earlier this week, we got to watch LSU head coach Kim Mulkey get ousted from the tournament by the legend, Caitlin Clark of Iowa. And it was a brilliant performance by Clark. I can't tell you how much fun she is to watch on television. I think I would probably rather watch her than pretty much any other basketball player right now. But I wanted to talk briefly about both her and actually LSU center Angel Reese, who was dominant in that Elite Eight game against Iowa, tweaked her ankle and really was not a factor in the game in the second half. And I think that's a big reason why Iowa won that game. And Reese was mentioned in a Kent Babb profile of Kim Mulkey in the Washington Post. It was the one that Mulkey got all pissed off about before it even published. She was like, "I'll sue you," or whatever. And it turned out to be just, you know, a pretty well-written, but, you know, fairly toothless profile. It wasn't like, there wasn't anything in there. Like, I think we were all expecting her, like, emails with her doing Gruden shit or something like that that would get her fired. Didn't happen that way. But the thing I wanted to talk to you guys about was a passage about Reese that Babb wrote, which was fans chanting one more year at Angel Reese, pleading with Reese to stay in Baton Rouge. And because of the value of her name, image, and likeness, or NIL rights, it's estimated to be worth multiples more than the $240,000 WNBA maximum salary. So she might stay in college. So I wanted to ask both of you, and I'll start with you, Ratto. What happens when players like Angel Reese and Caitlin Clark can make more money from playing college ball than they can as professionals in the WNBA?
Well, I think we're assuming that WNBA won't bend its rules, which I don't believe for a minute, because this is, as much as it's ever been, women's college basketball's great moment, which means that it is the WNBA's great moment. And they've had phenomenal players in the past, but because Caitlin Clark is now, she's part of the morning show. She's on the Today Show, Good Morning America. She's
right, your mom's
an American
server.
Figure, right. Yeah. And anybody slipstreaming behind her becomes an American figure as a result of that. So the WNBA is going to find ways to pay Angel Reese the same way that they find ways to pay Caitlin Clark, in ways that it will be not feasible for LSU to try to match that. So I think that's a non-issue. I think Angel Reese can call her own number and get it.
Can the WNBA do that, though? Because they have operated, and you have to correct me on this, Ratto, but they have essentially operated on shoestring budgets for their entire lifespan. And I remember them, you know, essentially being they were not a profitable enterprise for a great long time of their lifespan. Is that correct?
But for the most part, yeah. If you presume that profitability is basically about what you're getting at the gate as opposed to what you're paying, and they were still probably eking out a living because they weren't paying anybody anything. But this is the moment for women's basketball in the United States to become a thing. And if the WNBA hides behind its draconian salary cap to blow this moment, it deserves to die, because it's never been bigger. It's never been more entertaining to a broad audience. And we haven't even mentioned Juju Watkins, who is going to be the next big thing. So I think they're going to find ways to pay Angel Reese whatever she wants, in the same way that they will find ways to pay Caitlin Clark whatever she wants. And eventually there's going to become a multi-tiered salary cap in which a lot of players get squeezed, but the big names get paid off.
I always wondered to what extent the people who are, I mean, which I guess is basically the NBA at this point, but I mean, how serious they want to get about making the WNBA big, because I don't see beyond, you know, various cultural pathologies that are a bummer to talk about and that we all know well. Given how good the quality of the league is now, and given the quality of the stars, we've named three really big, really high wattage, really famous already stars in college basketball that are going to be entering the league soon. If they decided to do what Ray is talking about, which is basically try to grab this moment and have a, you know, a decade like the NBA had in the 80s or during the Jordan period that like really redefines what the ceiling is for the league. If they decide to do that, I think that this could be bigger than, I mean, certainly beyond being bigger than it was. I mean, like bigger than any women's sports league in the United States has ever been, and bigger than it's easy to imagine from our current vantage point. I just don't know how serious the people involved are about that. I've never really gotten the sense that, well, I mean, in the WNBA, as in every other sports league, that the people administering it or overseeing, you know, it from a team-to-team basis, I don't think they're as serious about it as the players and the fans are, and I think that's kind of a drag. I would love to be proven wrong, personally.
The other thing is that their TV contract is up, along with the NBA's, in 2025. So, in theory, if you had someone like Caitlin Clark in the fold, someone who gets ratings, like it's indisputable right now. Like Fox was going to give her their own NIL deal to stay at Iowa because they were making so much money from the ratings that she was pulling in. Then it's like, okay, we have this centerpiece that we can sell to networks to say, okay, instead of paying us, you know, shitty eight figures a year for the TV rights, we're going to want more than that. We're going to want nine figures. And like she would be essentially the face of that effort, or, you know, she goddamn ought to be, right?
Well, here's the fascinating thing to me. The NBA doesn't run the WNBA, but it has a stake in it. And if they are serious about, you know, trying to, you know, pick up their own ratings, which have been flagging, this is the place you go. And this is where you just say, you know what? We'll help bankroll this. And they can do that through TBS or TNT or ESPN. So it's going to end up being a network fight more than anything else. And Fox, you know, has always been sort of lukewarm on the college basketball thing because they've never had either the women's tournament or the men's tournament.
Right.
So unless they're planning to become incredibly bullish on women's sports, which I can't see Fox doing, I think they'll either get priced out or they'll just decide, you know what? We made our effort. We're done. I just think there's going to be money for Caitlin Clark and Angel Reese and Juju Watkins and whatever the next iteration of those three names are. Because if you're not going to seize this moment, then why do you have a WNBA franchise? If this isn't the time when you go, this is the next growth industry, then you're not doing this for any reason that makes sense, except you like women's basketball. I mean, I just seems to me that, you know, if you can't seize this moment, you don't know what a moment is. If you don't know what a moment is, why do you?
Well, also, right, if you watch Caitlin play, it's like, it's so obvious. It's like, okay, everyone will want to watch this. Like, I think that this woman is probably more famous right now than like pretty much any MLB player. Like I think it's like, she's a fucking star and a half. It's like, I'm not sure I've ever seen anything like it. And watching her play, it's like, it's above and beyond what I expected. It's like, okay.
It's Steph shit, but it still feels new. It still feels new when somebody other than Steph Curry is doing
it. I mean, it's Steph shit, but it's also like Jokic passing. You know, like she's such a good passer that her teammates like don't know that the passes are coming because they're shitty. It's like, oh my God, well, we should put her on team. Put her on LSU and they're going to beat everybody by 70 points. Like it would be insane.
You put her on any team and that's going to happen. I mean, the thing that didn't get mentioned about the game against LSU on Monday night was the 12 assists.
Yeah.
When they tried to do defensive things to her, said, oh, there's an open player somewhere and I'm going to find her. There are still holes in her game that she can still make better. You know, the willingness to do the little, you know, 10 foot floater that, you know, she was too interested in dishing off there. Well, she'll learn that when she gets to the Indiana Fever. But she's a riveting show in a sport that just now has caught people's imagination after 25 years of treading water or worse with other phenomenal players. So, you know, however you want to compare her, she's a cash cow.
Yeah. And it's a good spot for the league because she's a person that people are going to want to watch on their own. There's two super teams, that so that's like games that she's going to be playing against that people are going to want to watch for that reason, that are also, you know, advertisements for the two really good teams in the league right now. It's kind of exciting in some ways. Like, I know Ray did mention that the NBA's ratings have not been at their best. I feel like this is going to be a fun playoffs. Like, this is a good time to be watching basketball. I would like to see, I just feel like here as anywhere else, like, if you've got a good product, I want you to succeed in selling and promoting it. I just need to see people care about stuff. So I don't want to see anybody half-ass this. Like, it's just, it would be a bummer to waste this moment.
It has been quite something to live through. And, you know, we're three men talking about this.
And I think that's
speak
great.
Speak for yourselves.
What amazing allies we are, Drew. Right, I agree with what you're saying.
I don't want to sound too, like, thirsty dick about it. So it, like, but it is kind of remarkable that I've lived through not just the inception of the WNBA, but getting to this moment where, you know, women's college basketball, I think when I started, was not on television. Like, the women's tournament wasn't even on television. And now it's like, this is an important sport. And this is something that everyone's paying attention to. And it doesn't get, you know, it doesn't get written off by bro sports fans, or at least shouldn't, because it's a women's sport. And, you know, I count myself in there. I was a sports sexist for a good amount of my life. And I really think about how wasteful it was, the things that I missed out on. Like, I wasn't doing anybody a disservice except for myself, you know? So, or I should say the greatest disservice was to myself. So, you know, it really was a joy to watch Caitlin Clark, particularly at Kim Mulkey's expense, because Mulkey didn't know how to defend her for a solid 37 minutes, which was very, very fun.
Mulkey is a great character.
In fairness to Kim Mulkey, which is a sentence that makes me taste ash.
Yeah, I was going to say. Good luck with this one.
I don't think there was an answer available. I don't think Flo J was going to make that much of a difference. I think that the only person right now who could stop Caitlin Clark is Caitlin Clark. She's got to shoot like 2 for 17.
Or get hooked on Crocodile, and I could do that. I could help her with that.
Well, that's if she actually contracted Indiana Fever itself, which as a disorder, if you've ever been to Indiana, you know it's debilitating, and there's no cure for it.
It's hard to warm your blood that much in Indiana.
Yeah.
Hey, we have to finish previewing the Major League Baseball season, because that's going to be useful for our listeners. Very quickly, good or bad, we're going to go in the East. We're going to just trade off. All right. So, all right. Ratto, you're going to go first.
Very fast.
Roth, you're going to go after that. All right. The Atlanta Braves, Ratto, good or bad?
Great.
Oh, that's annoying.
Like, really great. Like,
yeah,
low.
I hate it. He's right.
I don't like that.
I think they're better than the Dodge.
Wow.
Well, okay.
It makes my flesh crawl. The Miami Marlins, Roth, good or bad?
Like, not good, but kind of annoyingly good-ish. If our distinction is they have a winning record, I think they could be good. Yes, I think they could have a winning record.
You would be just a nightmare on the witness stand. I know,
unfortunately.
The New York Mets, Ratto. Roth doesn't get to say anything about the Mets. What? Are they good or bad?
Not good, because it's money spent without a direction. They don't know what they want or why they want it, so they tread water, and treading water in New York is being bad.
Well, I agree.
It's almost like it's very James Dolan-esque in a way. The Philadelphia Phillies, Roth, good or bad?
This is annoying. I don't like the way you're parting these out. This is unfair. Yeah. They're pretty good. They've looked lousy so far, but they're pretty good.
You haven't thrown down a meh yet. I'm waiting for you to be like,
I don't do meh.
They're fine.
I guess. If you want.
The Washington Nationals, Ratto. They're a juggernaut, right? Everyone's terrified of the Washington Nationals. Yeah.
They're not meh. They're fair. Yeah.
Are they worse than the A's?
They're not very good at all.
They're really fucking bad. They're the worst team in the National League.
And they're trying to be worse.
Okay. Well, I'm good for them. Are they the worst team in the National League? Could they be worse than the A's?
No.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. Let's go.
The only team that could be worse than the A's is Kansas City, is the White Sox, and they would really have to start throwing games actively.
This is really sort of bottom of the NBA type shit here with the Wizards and the Pistons all vying to be just the suckiest suck that ever sucked. And that,
I think it's cool that poop fighting is the biggest growth industry in American professional sports.
Roth, the Chicago Cubs, good or bad?
Yeah, good, I guess.
There are so many teams now where I got the Cubs, I got the White Sox, and I got the Royals, and it's like, those teams won World Series not long ago, and yeah, like it was really nice and it was really fun, and now they're complete dog. They're such dog shit. It's almost like those titles never happened.
We need to look into the central divisions of both Major League Baseball leagues. Something's not right.
Ratto, the Cincinnati Reds, good or bad?
Fun, not yet good.
Yep. Oh, interesting. Right. Roth, the Brewers. I have a friend named Brewer. He's from Boston, so I say Brewer.
Oh, nice. Shout out to Brewer. They're pretty good. Like, they're good for the Central. I think they're the best team in that division. But yeah, that's good enough, actually. Whatever. We're not doing a 90-minute podcast. They're good.
Are they still asking for a new stadium, even though they got one at the turn of the century?
They are, but I don't think anybody's taking it that seriously. Like, okay, it's just one of those annoying things that you do. It's like if I wandered into a fancy restaurant and just like slapped a 20 down on the table and was like, how much caviar? That's kind of the Brewers' negotiating tactic, as far as I can
tell. You know, I think every owner just does that now, where they just sort of like, you know, it'd be nice if I had a new stadium, you know, and what do you guys think of like a little trial balloon?
The new thing when they don't get the stadium, then they're like, well, I would take $500 million to modernize the stadium that we have.
Right. Yeah.
And I don't think I've ever heard a good explanation for what that means.
We need to compete. We just have to compete. They always
like we're putting on solar panels or we're, you know, doing something that's going to make the stadium function better. It's usually like a bigger screen. And then we're going to hire McKinsey to see if it's possible to train robots to make hot dogs.
Yeah, yeah, it's going to be like, well, how do we get a McCormick and Schmick's into like the luxury box level?
Yes.
And that's going to cost, $750 million in public funds.
That's it. What's, you're paying for quality.
The Pittsburgh Pirates, Ratto, another juggernaut. Are they going to be good or bad?
They are more fun than the Reds, but they are also not going to be good because their owner is afraid to be good.
Yep.
Okay, you got a good one now, Roth, and I'm a little scared of your answer. The St. Louis Cardinals, are they going to be good or bad?
So I'm going to go ahead and say that they're going to be bad.
Oh!
They were fully lousy last year, and you can go back and check the record. I wrote a Sunday blog when they were really bad. They had just finished beating the Mets, so it wasn't, you know, it's all relative. But right. I had been reading about them, trying to figure out if they were actually bad, and they actually like out Cardinals to themselves last year, and I think they might have out Cardinals themselves in a slightly different way this year, which is by bringing in, just completely restock their rotation with 32 and up starting pitchers who generally don't strike anybody out, and that's not a winning strategy in my estimation, especially given that last year one of their big problems was that they had guys that didn't strike anyone out and they had a shit defense behind them. Defense is a little bit better this year, but it is, I think that they are, it's starting to dry up, and I could obviously be proven wrong. The Cardinals have had teams that I thought were shitty right up until the moment they literally won the World Series. The World Series,
they do that from time to time,
but I don't think this team is it.
All right, Ratto.
They let Adam Wainwright retire, and they still didn't get younger.
Yep, really remarkable to do that.
He's good on TV, that Adam.
He is good. I like him.
The defending National League champion, Arizona Diamondbacks, Ratto. Are they good, and are they good enough to repeat and go back to the World Series?
They most certainly are not, because the first two things that their owner, Ken Kendrick, said after they went to the World Series was, we have to lower payroll, and I want a new stadium. That's the guy who's profoundly unserious about his business.
Yep. That said, they did spend. He said that, and it's annoying, and it's very Ken Kendrick. It's also funny that his name is Ken Kendrick. That's like if you were trying to like recast the Nathan Arizona character in real life for a version of Raising Arizona that was rebooted for the present age. But they signed Eduardo Rodriguez, and they signed for 1 year Jordan Montgomery, so that when that rotation is at full strength, it's going to be very good. I just don't think last year them getting to the World Series felt very kismet powered to me. So I think they'll be better, but they weren't the best team in the National League the year that they came out of the National League. So
They also, they still have Corbin Carroll. That counts for something, I would imagine.
Yeah, he rocks.
Yes? Okay. All right. Let's go to the Colorado Rockies, Roth. Are they, I have no idea if they're any good or not. Are they good or bad?
Quite bad.
Okay.
Are you, well, it's funny. They're the Rockies. So they're bad, but they're bad in a way that, like, isn't really in any sort of alignment with any of the other bad teams we've talked about. Like, they're perfectly happy with how they are. They have so last year they lost 100 games, 102, 103 games.
Oh, congrats.
And they have since extended 9 different guys from that roster to keep them around, to keep the core of your shitty 57-win team on track. So they're just doing something different.
They still have Charlie Blackmon.
They do. He was one of the guys they extended.
Which is a condemnation of its own.
Yep.
I like that I got a text just the other night from Dan McQuaid. He's on paternity leave, but he sent me one of his favorite Fanatics fuck-ups from this season where they were using, the Rockies had jerseys with their colors from like 8 years ago, and it wasn't their color anymore.
Yeah.
But they fucked up and stuff.
Yeah, their uniforms clash right now. If you watch them play on the road, it's like they got dressed in the dark. It is not good.
Like a two-tone uniforms.
Yep.
Oh, Ratto, the Dodgers. I assume they stink, right? Just totally.
Yeah.
Total waste
yeah,
of
you're
team.
Absolutely right.
Not trying to win, them. Not spending money.
Yeah. They have the lineup that doesn't let pitchers survive. But they also are weak at pitching. I don't know that I trust Evan Phillips as their closer, but I think they're the kind of team that can win 110 games and still not be the team that gets to the World Series. I still think that's Atlanta, because I think Atlanta's got better pitching.
Atlanta is incredibly good. I just want to underline Ray's point about how unbelievably good the top five, I mean, really six, Teoscar Hernandez is really also very good. The top of the Dodgers lineup, they have like three of the five most entertaining to watch hitters in baseball, and they all bat right after each other. They are unreal. Appointment viewing. Like, I don't love it, but they're really, really good.
I hate to be the ignoramus here, but is Shohei clear to pitch this season, or
no.
Do we have to wait until 2025?
You'll have to wait till 2025.
Okay.
But he's already been...
Unless there's a big game that he's bet.
Yes.
Well, that's another question, because you said, okay, Ray, you said essentially that their Achilles heel, particularly in the postseason, would be pitching. Is there a scenario where they would have Ohtani pitch in the postseason if they made it there, or is that...
There are any number of scenarios, because October is a long way away.
Right.
If they had him pitch, that seems counterproductive given the fact that they will be into him for $698 million.
Yeah.
And, you know, if you bring him back one start too early, that's the kind of outlay that even Dodger owners would feel.
Yeah.
Right.
I think it's just the size of the investment is so significant. The Dodgers are also interesting in a kind of a Razy type of way. I know that we're talking more baseball than Drew can handle, but I'm going to do it. They're pitching right now.
It's all the NFL I've subjected you to.
That's all right. Pitching right now is not great. There is a chance that by the middle of the season that they have Clayton Kershaw and Walker Buehler in that rotation too, and then it is extremely good if those guys are healthy. This is like the Dodgers' special secret, is that they've helped pitchers at the end of their careers, or guys that have had, I mean, Walker Buehler's 29, but have guys that have injury issues come back stronger than anybody thought they would. They've managed to optimize a roster outside of spending as much money as they've spent in that way. And if they hit on a couple of these, James Paxton pitched for them last night. I don't think anybody's expecting James Paxton to still be pitching in October. But if they do the Dodgers thing with some of the extremely high-quality veteran pitchers that they have, then they will be very, very close to the Braves, I think, in terms of pitching by the end of the year. It's just, that's a huge if, because once pitchers start breaking down, they generally just keep breaking down until such time as they retire. And even the Dodgers they slow that process. They don't stop it.
Let's talk about the San Diego Padres, Roth, who no longer have Juan Soto, and it would appear to me are not quite as all in as they have been in the past 2 years. Am I looking at a downslope for them from a peak that they never actually reached? Are they going to be bad?
I don't think they're going to be bad. I don't think they're going to be as good as I thought they could have been last year.
Okay. But
as we discussed with Justin Halpern on here last year, they were one of, like, they were bad or weirdly underperformed in ways that don't make sense. That they lost more close games, more extra inning games than any probability would suggest could even be possible, let alone for a team that has players that good on it. And so I feel like a sort of even having taken as many important players out of the mix as they have, I think that it would be really hard for them to be disappointing in exactly the same ways. And if they're getting something more like the expected performance from the players they still have, they're still going to be a wild card team, I think.
Right. They still have Tatis and they still have Machado.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay. They have a bad case of reverse dead owner syndrome.
Yes.
In that their owner, Peter Seidler, who just passed, was the guy who said, I'm going to spend like crazy because being stuck in the southwest corner of the United States, crushed by the Dodgers in terms of fan base, if I don't spend like crazy to get us noticed, who are we? And now they're going to have new owners. I suspect they won't be as gung-ho to do this. And I think this is the start of what I think will be a decline.
That's very sad. So let's end on a happier note, Ray, with the San Francisco Giants, who are probably good, bad. I don't know. Are they good or bad, Ratto?
You actually achieved the right answer, which is they are 80-82. Plus, they are now unpopular with their own fan base.
Right. Yeah.
I mean, they have tried to find as many ways to piss off a mindlessly loyal fan base as anybody can. The only positive thing they have done all offseason is hire Bob Melvin as their manager. Other than that, they have essentially told their fan relations department, you guys could take the year off.
We're going to figure this shit out.
And their latest thing, they used to have tiles in front of the stadium. The people who donated money have their names put on tiles in front of the stadium. They're now going to get rid of the tiles and make them digital.
Make them what?
Digital.
Oh, they NFT'd them.
What?
Yeah.
That is like a San Francisco joke that you would not even bother posting. Like you could workshop it and then be like, that's a little on the nose, isn't it? I don't think I'm going
to
do that.
It's almost like having people standing next to every beer line. And as soon as you get your beer, there's somebody to piss in it.
Just a little bit. This is a compliment of the owner. Mr. Johnson sends his regards.
Yeah. We only have time for one fun bag question. So it's time to open up the fun bag. This is a real question from a defector reader or distraction listener. This is from Andrew Ratto. He writes in, I was walking through my neighborhood the other day and saw a yard with a bunch of squirrels and rabbits both hanging out. Who would win in a battle? All the squirrels in the world versus all of the rabbits? I assume squirrels are much more vicious, but rabbits can jump, though. They probably have a sheer number advantage as well as a reproduction advantage. Gotta go squirrels still. Ratto, who wins? Squirrels versus rabbits?
Yeah, Ray,
squirrels. It's not close. Because we don't know how many squirrels there are because nobody has pet squirrels. They do have pet rabbits. And squirrels, basically, they're rats with a good PR person for their tails. Otherwise, they cohabit with possums, who are mean bastards, and raccoons, who are even meaner bastards. Give me the mean bastard every time.
Oh, all right.
And I say that, with admiration.
I was going to say, like, this is very, it feels like somebody who's speaking like you've watched some game tape and are like, I like that. I might use that.
I think it's very autobiographical.
But the rabbits, I think, are also underrated for being dickweeds, too. I mean, they're adorable and everything like that. But I think they're also kind of obnoxious creatures. This is an interesting question.
That's no ordinary rabbit.
Sabrina, we have to get Sabrina on this.
Yes.
Who's the biggest dickweed among lower...
You understand science. Can we ask you the dumbest question that you could possibly be asked? Would you mind helping us with that?
Oh, I want Imbler on the podcast so I can ask them all of those questions.
The thing with, I'll say for squirrels, the rats with a good PR agent is 100% correct. There's a park near us that we take our little constitutionals in every day, mostly to look at other people's dogs.
You take a shit in the park?
Our constitutional. It's just a walk.
Oh,
Yeah, I do take a shit in the park, but that's not, that's private. That's my business.
Okay.
The park, like all parks in New York, has rats in it. And to the point where there's like a time of day where we don't go there because it's when the rats come out and they're just kind of chittering and chasing each other around and dragging whole slices of pizza out of garbage bags and stuff. And yet when a squirrel runs past us in the same way that a rat sometimes does, we're like, oh, look at him. Look, where's he going? Where are you going, buddy? Like, and they're the same. Like, the bodies are the same. They're disgusting. A squirrel's tail is fluffy and cute, whereas a rat's tail is flesh-colored and odious.
The tail's the big thing.
I think that's basically it. But for whatever reason, I don't know. I like seeing a squirrel. It feels auspicious, whereas whenever I see a rat, I feel like I need to go home and take a silkweed shower.
I'm just very glad that, because I was going to ask if either of you, when you see a squirrel, kind of want to go pet it, because I always want to. And I'm glad that Roth, I'm glad that you kind of had that instinct, because they have a nice fluffy tail.
Yeah.
And like, I think I was told once when I was a kid that the tail like contained like needles and would like poison you or something like that. Mm-hmm. I don't think that's actually correct, but I think the squirrel would fuck me up anyway.
No, there was a lot of stories about rabies in the suburbs when I was in. So it's like, if you see a squirrel acting crazy, don't approach it. And I wasn't going to approach a squirrel anyway. That's just like, I got other things going on. But also, like, squirrels, all they do is act stupid. Their brains are the size of a walnut, so they're just going to, like, run in circles and chase each other and make weird noises. I don't think that means they have rabies. I think that there was a lot of times where I'd see a squirrel and kind of be wary of it, and it was just doing its business. It was just doing squirrel shit.
When I see a squirrel, I regret bringing my scythe with me.
He does carry a scythe. It's gotten
Who
him in
doesn't?
Trouble.
Who
that's
a,
but
us?
That's, you know, in Gavin Newsom's California.
Yeah.
Let's reap this podcast right now. Eric Silver is our producer. Brandon Google is our editor. Our theme song is by Kirk Hamilton. Ads and production services have a multitude. And you can subscribe to Defector.com right now. Just go to Defector and hit the subscribe button. You can also email us at distraction@defector.com or even call us at 909-726-3720 and leave a message. That's 909-PANERA-0. Thank you, Ray and Roth, for enlightening me and the audience on the Major League Baseball season. I hope you guys have a wonderful baseball season and you have lots of peanuts and hot dogs and Cracker Jacks.
Okay. Thank you, Drew.
You're welcome.
Yep. Sounds good.
Bye.
Bye.
Bye.